If you're just tuning in, this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.net. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Sabine Pooks. We're talking to staff of Project Grad Kenai Peninsula, a Homer-based initiative that connects students at the most isolated schools in the school district with opportunities and resources to succeed through high school and beyond. Jane Beck is the executive director. Kenny Dayer is a site coordinator for Project Grad, and Shelley Worsfold is an academic after-school coach.
You guys talked a little bit about this year and the weirdness of COVID and kind of how that's impacted things, but can we talk a little bit more? You mentioned connectivity. I imagine in some of these places, connectivity is a little bit difficult just because they're so remote. Was that something that was kind of a challenge during the pandemic? How did you guys structure those programs when you couldn't go to the schools or fly in, especially since a lot of these communities are really isolated? So there's, of course, the added risk of bringing the pandemic, you know, to these communities. Is that something that maybe, Kenny, you want to talk about?
Yeah, that was a very weird year. And I think we just kind of had to recalibrate and kind of figure out what exactly it was that we were expecting from our programming. And I think the first and foremost thing was just to be consistent and being available the best we can. The connectivity was there, but as you mentioned, and you're correct in doing so, it was spotty at times. But so we had to get a little bit more creative. Phone calls home, phone calls to student cell phones. You know, being fortunate to have that school staff to accommodate our Zoom time or phone calls to the office and requesting students to chat with. Small mailings, routine mailings, just, you know, we're still here, we're caring, here's a piece of chocolate and here's some resources, here's a way to get a hold of us. And I think that went a long way too. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting in person a little bit more this year. And we came out of that year learning quite a bit. And like I mentioned earlier, there were some silver linings there, you know, having three schools that are very weather dependent on accessing. There may be times where we resort to those methods that we learned so well during the COVID year, Zooming or phone calls or more remote in technology.
Jane, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to, in response to that question, it's a really good question. And our first step really when COVID hit last March was to really figure out what we were dealing with. What is the reality here? Who has connectivity? Who does not? Who has devices? Who is on their mom's hotspot? Who's having to share, their devices and their connections with their brothers and sisters? Whose parents don't want their child on screen time that much? How much time are they on screen time? All of these were considerations that we really had to explore and come up with either community a response to that particular community, because all the communities are so different from each other. And then within those communities, family responses. So what is okay for those families? What are they going to be comfortable with? What we didn't want to do was to see kids on screen all day long for their school. And then here we come with an after school thing and we're asking them to get on Zoom again for another 2 hours. So, you know, we just had to work through all those things, as did the district. And so we did a lot of those, like Shelley was saying, they did a lot of take home packets that were hands on things that would involve the parents. And
for me personally, this year with the connectivity too, it wasn't so much with school, to me, connectivity, that was always okay. It was actually when the students were remote. So there was both of that happening. There was the first time when kids were all at home And that was much more challenging than when they came back to school, and yet we still weren't able to be in the school. So there we had a whole gamut of working this out. And my biggest objective, I think all of us were just trying to stay connected with them. You know, even though we couldn't be together, the most important thing was for them to know we were still here. We're not going anywhere. We support you. It's going to look a little different, but we're willing to try if you're willing to try. And for me personally, I just think it was great because I actually got to see and be with my students in a way this year that I would not normally have been able to do. So I was able to Zoom with kids on a one-on-one basis and read with them. I was able to do some SEL work, that social emotional learning, with them in a different capacity than having a whole room full of kids. I was able to Zoom with them one-on-one. So there, like I said, there are some great silver linings from COVID. I'm excited to be back face-to-face so we can tinker, but like Kenny said too, these lessons are learned and we are ready to utilize them and just make our program even stronger.
Well, and of course, now it's summer. Do you guys do a lot of programming in the summer? What are your summers look like at Project Grad?
We're taking a breath right now a little bit. we don't normally, we have never included any really robust summer programming in any of our grant proposals. We've done some short kind of end of the year field trips and things where, you know, we get those spring tides and we partner up with coastal studies and have, Shelley was involved in, you know, taking kids across the bay and hiking and tide pooling but that was really pretty much wrapped up by the end of May.
Gotcha. You mentioned before, we were talking about connectivity and kind of staying in touch with kids once they've graduated from high school. How do you do that? And how do you kind of make sure that kids have the support from you guys once they've, you know, aged out of the school district and once they're kind of onto those next steps? What are the mechanisms kind of for following those kids and making sure that they're doing well in the next phase of their lives?
That's Kenny.
That mean?
Kenny, you want to talk about that
I
one?
I feel like it happens. I really have to reflect on why it happens, I guess. I think just talking to how we're forming those really strong connections with not just the youth, but the families is why that happens. It's a kind of a natural thing. When you're kind of a big part of their support network, transitioning from the village into these post-secondary institutions, it's just for me, it was a pretty natural communication that opens up, just check-ins. I make a point to check in routinely with students a year, two, 3 years out, but more often than not, it's them approaching me about, bringing me some fresh fish off their boat or let me know that they're getting an internship it's just a pretty natural thing. Yeah. I got to think about the mechanisms really in place there. There are some grant measures, of course, that we're checking up on these guys, but it's a very easy gig. It's really a pleasure to be connected a few years beyond their high school graduation.
Well, it sounds like you kind of develop almost like a personal relationship with these kids that makes it, it sounds just very authentic and organic kind of in that way.
Yeah. One other helpful thing there is as these high school students, middle school, high school students are approaching graduation, we can use these this good handful of awesome success stories we have with these recent graduates doing really well after high school. We can model that for them and being like this is what's working for your cousin that's up in Avtec, or this is what's going on with your buddy from the other village and he's loving it. Maybe you guys should connect, or at least let me go up and take you to show you why he's doing so well. And that kind of model seems to work really well.
Right. You have examples of kids who've done something similar who come from the same background as they do. Yeah. So they can kind of use that as a point, a jumping off point to
yeah, exactly. Students. Yeah. Like Jane said, some of these programs, you know, they seem right in our backyards, but they're pretty distant for these students coming out of these four villages of mine. So as far as a jumping off point, they don't have to jump too far. They can kind of watch the success stories that are coming out of their villages a couple years prior.
What tend to be some of the biggest concerns or kind of points of, you know, important points for you guys to work with kids on when it comes to leaving their villages and next steps? Like, what seem to be some of the things that that students and families worry about the most when it comes to taking those next steps? Is it primarily a lot about distance?
Yeah. So we partner up with a really cool organization called Bright Ways Learning, and we've adopted some of their terminology. And Jane mentioned it earlier, web is support. So these students in the villages, they've got an awesome family infrastructure, really great community of support. And as they go off beyond their villages for whatever training or college or vocational thing that they want to do, sometimes kind of brewing up that support network around you is a little bit troublesome. And that's personally my biggest concern, is making sure that they know their resources beyond their village. And sometimes I like to play a bit of a matchmaker for the student and the resources around them, really finding those islands of support and making sure that they understand that at this point, you know, there's people working for you. We're maybe back in the village, you haven't really needed to introduce yourself or shake someone's hand for most all of your life because your family and really tight community with them. Now that you're only 60 miles away at this college, there's some introductions to be made, and that you've got a lot of care and supportive resources around you, and we really hope that you use them.
When I know we're talking about a lot of different communities, a lot of really kids growing up in really different situations and places and everything, but generally once kids kind of move away, do you kind of track whether kids come back to their villages once they've left? Is that kind of a focus of the program, of kind of seeing where kids go after? Does that seem to be something that kids do? Or I'm trying to think of how to word that better, but I guess I'm just curious if kids kind of come back once they've left for college, or if they, when they've gone to AvTech and things like that.
I understand your question, because I think that it's linked to your previous question about what families might be concerned about. And, you know, when Kenny was talking about how close-knit the communities are, and parents don't want to lose their children to a bigger outside world, oftentimes, you know, they would like to see them go out and get some training and then bring that training back to give back to the community. So that we do really want to support those students and those families, so that the training that they get, whether it's a vocational or whatever, is something that's relevant to their families and their communities. So we don't really track, we don't have like a spreadsheet or anything that we track how many children or how many students are coming back to their community, but we have a pretty good understanding that a lot of them do. A lot of them go out and get their plumbing or their heating or their a lot of AvTech. AvTech is a great technical school for a lot of these kids. So some don't, some do, but I understand your question, and it is something that we're sensitive to, that we don't want to push any kids into something that we think might be good for them. We want to support those and help them see what opportunities are available, so that they and to help build up that self-confidence, so that they can understand that they can be successful doing it. And
Well, and you mentioned AvTech a few times. AvTech is such a valuable resource that is just right kind of in our backyards. We're lucky to have that right there. And I imagine that's a great place for to send students or to help students kind of get to after school. So What are some things that you guys are focused on going forward for Project Grad? Are there any goals or programs you'd like to see long term? Are there any kind of ways in which the program will be changing? What kind of is the future of Project Grad looking like? Jane, maybe you want to talk about that.
Sure. Well, we're constantly evolving. we're definitely primarily grant funded. That's a lot of what my job is to try to secure the funding. And then these guys do all the hard work of working, or the fun work of working with the kids and the communities. And I've kind of, over the last 6 years, been sitting at a computer making sure that we're getting the money and it's spent with integrity and all of that great stuff. But the future, we will respond to the community needs and the needs of the students, and we'll also respond to the funding sources. So I love this after-school component that we have just kind of ventured into in the last 3 years. That's relatively new to us, but I love that elementary component. I'm looking forward to spending more. We're K-12 support, and Kenny mentioned like a lot of his work is with that middle and high school. It's kind of shifted that way in response again to the needs of those students. I'm looking forward to strengthening our elementary program in the native ed schools, and also to keep people like Shelley and in these after school programs doing that, building curiosity about the world and learning I keep going. We're just going to keep going and being really creative and doing things that they don't get to do during the school day. And the other cool thing about having grant funding too is that within that grant funding, we have money for supplies that a lot of times the school teachers don't have. I mean, I don't know what they get, like $200 a year to spend on supplies for 30 kids in their classroom. And so we can buy STEM kits and we can purchase the materials that they need so that they can really get their hands dirty.
That's really cool. I also imagine there's a lot of expenses that have to do with getting to these. I've got to think transportation is one of the biggest expenses for you guys too, right? Getting people to these really remote areas.
Yeah, the flights are expensive, and the gas is expensive to drive out and back. Those are definitely line items.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're kind of figuring out the IT infrastructure to do some of this, at least partially remotely, and maybe a new sort of way, which maybe.
Well, you know what is kind of cool is that before, when we get weathered out or weathered in, whatever side it is, you know, the response to that would be maybe some phone calls, or we'd end up catching up on our documents and paperwork and that kind of thing. Now, you know, we're sitting here on Zoom right now. Now we know that we can connect with students in classrooms. It's not face to face. What do you call this? Virtual. You know, we can see each other, and it's possible. So,
I guess one of the last things I would ask is kind of: are there any misconceptions that you think people have about education in rural communities, or about kids coming out of rural communities that you've kind of seen? That might be a hard question. I'm just curious if that's something that you guys have come up against.
It's kind of a huge one. So I think that there's a lot of negative stereotypes that are out there about especially our Indigenous populations. our Indigenous population. And I don't really want to get into that because we're very strengths-based. We want to support the strengths and grow those. Similarly, with the Russian Old Believer communities, I think there's a lot of mystery about who they are and what they're about, and stereotypes there as well. So, I think whatever race or ethnicity you are, there are negative stereotypes, and that's a problem all across our country, particularly today. So we will do our best to shine a light on these communities and these students in a positive way.
How many kids did you guys have graduate this year? We're talking in June, so maybe this past month has been all these high school graduations. Did you have a lot of kids graduate who you were able to celebrate this year?
Yeah, we really did. Oh man, I should have this number off the top of my head. Was it 16? It's a little bit, 16. What's that?
16, but those are the ones that are just in our Alaskan, those four communities.
Yeah, so the ones that I support with post-secondary plans, it was 16. And that may include a couple that were celebrating and walking in some of the villages that we're at boarding schools too, which are always a very warranted celebration to have and awesome to include them. So yeah, it was 16, and there's a good handful of awesome plans that they have that they're executing this fall, and I'm looking really really forward to staying connected with them and celebrating in their future successes here.
That's awesome. Is there anything else any of you would like to add?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity. Project Grad has been around since, like I said, since 2003. I wear my Project Grad sweatshirt or whatever around, and people will still say, "What is that? What do you guys do?" So because we're in the more isolated communities, there's a lot of people who don't really know what we do. And so we're not in the big schools in Kenai or Homer. So thank you for the opportunity to kind of share our work.
Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Sabine.
Thank you a lot, Sabine. Thanks.
Thank you to Jane Beck, Kenny Dayer, and Shelley Worsfold from Project Grad Kenai Peninsula for joining us this week. You can listen to this conversation again at kdll.org. I'm Sabine Pooks. Thanks for tuning in.